Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and Tune Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, iTunes, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. And joining us live this Thursday afternoon in Innovative System, the acclaimed actress and co-star of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches, now on Sunday nights on AMC and AMC Plus, Annabeth Gish. Hi, Annabeth. Welcome in.
Hi, Simon. How are you? Hi, everyone.
Very, very fine, thank you. And we want to hear from you. So if you have a question or comment for Annabeth, give us a call. The number you use is 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. We've got our chat room open for business with you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. We will have the latest news notes, including what turned out to be the atrocious ratings of the Golden Globes return on NBC Tuesday night in our second half hour, plus our new classic trivia question. We're going for our third weekly winner in a row. We have a brand new prize in question and play. And I also have some comments not only about the Golden Globes, but about the return of lingo to television last night on CBS. And why, if you haven't seen Let's Make a Deal lately, you ought to see it. Plus, Netflix has a very exciting expanded diversity program. We'll talk about it in our news notes section, and I'll comment on that all in our second half hour. Annabeth, what's been the reaction for you and your cast regarding Mayfair, which is finally coming to life on television?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think everyone's really excited. I think, I've been a long, long, long time fan of Anne Rice, and in particular this book, The Witching Hour, which is now called Mayfair Witches. And, you know, it's a broad, dense, huge, huge story to tell with many kind of intertwined stories. So, you know, I certainly hope people watch all 8 episodes and go, come along for the ride, because it's quite a bewitching show.
And in the program, you play a catalyst role. You play the mother of the protagonist, who is played by someone who a lot of people are calling the first big breakout star on television this year. Her name is Alexandra Daddario, and you play her mother.
I do, yes. I play Deirdre Mayfair, who is the mother that Rowan, Alexandra's character, has never known she had, the real, her birth mother, I come with quite a legacy of story and, sort of a very dark history that Rowan discovers through beginning in episode 1.
When you took on the role, did you contact Anne Rice and ask for advice about how to play it?
Well, if I could speak to people in their grave, I most certainly would have done that. But alas, Anne passed. It's funny because 20 years ago, when the book first came out, I was so obsessed with this particular novel that I wanted to play Rowan. I was just wanted so desperately. I think it's such a great story about women and empowerment and how we get off track with that empowerment. So although Anne Rice wasn't there, I definitely had moments while we were filming where I would sort of quietly internally say to myself, I hope we're making you happy. I hope we're making you happy to Anne.
Well, if Anne was not present, obviously, did any member of her estate, I know some of them are involved in the production or consultants to not only this show, but Interview with a Vampire, which has done very well for AMC since premiered last fall, or did any of their big fans or fan clubs contact you when they learned that you were going to take the role on?
Well, I think Christopher Rice, her son, has an involvement with AMC and with Gran Via, the production company. But I don't know the extent of his involvement. I think, AMC has done such a remarkable job with Interview with a Vampire. And as well as this show, I think it really does honor just her, how prolific she is and how, wildly beautiful her storytelling is. To answer your question, I did not have any direct interaction with Christopher or her estate, but I know that there are many, many people who are beloved readers and fans of her. So again, you know, and you kind of felt it while we were shooting in New Orleans. We were shooting on a house, on a street in the Lower Garden District, just minutes away from her estate, which is a stunning architectural location in New Orleans. And so she was close at hand, for sure.
What's it like shooting there? I mean, it's become sort of AMC's go-to place for Anne Rice shows. Interview with the Vampire shot there as well.
Well, you know, New Orleans is such a massive character itself in all of Anne Rice's work. I think, you know, you couldn't really film her anywhere else, honestly, to be authentic to her flavor. And the city itself is so rich and decadent and human and salty and sweaty. It's just all of those elements really, really are infused into our story, and our, you know, film can capture that so well, just like Anne did it with writing. And I love New Orleans. It's one of my favorite cities in the States because it just has, again, so much soul and flavor and aliveness.
Annabeth, when you take on a character like this that fans and readers have come to know for such a long time, and they have expectations like, I want blank to play this and blank to play that and so on and so forth, with such, you know, different traits, different qualities. What pitfalls are there for you as an actress to deal with when you have that kind of role, as opposed to creating an original role from scratch?
That's a great question. You know, I think a lot goes into, we always have to manage expectations, right? And everyone has their own interpretations and wants and hopes. But for me as a performer, I have to lock into my sense and my feeling and my resonance with the character. And keep in mind, you know, this is an adaptation, and creative liberties had to be taken to, A, make it current and modern, and a little bit more relevant today. There's no way in the world that the creators could ever really, I mean, the book itself is 600-700 pages. So, you know, to condense it just into 8 episodes, 8 hours of television, if that, is such an enormous task. And, you know, I really, Esta, our showrunner and creator of the show, is just did such a fine job with an immense task. You know, the responsibility was huge. And same thing for the character interpretation for us as actors. You know, you have to hope that you do your best and that it's well received. And you never know. You know, some people might not get it.
Talk more about working with the producers of the show. You mentioned Esther Spalding, whose work includes the hit Showtime series Masters of Sex, and also a show that Showtime picked up from Pop TV on Becoming a God in Central Florida, which was a great show for Christina Applegate. You also have Michelle Astley, who also did Masters of Sex, but also had great credits with historical atmospheric dramas like The Pacific and John Adams, both for HBO, both prize-winning programs. What was it like to work with producers who are getting into the horror, the atmospheric horror genre like this, perhaps for the first time in their careers?
Well, again, what a fantastic question, Simon. You know, this is what I love so much about Esta and Michelle and the team that they collected around them, is they're high literary people themselves. You know, I've known Esta actually for 15 years, I think, and I have always respected her perspective and her voice. And I think this is a wonderful example of her dipping her toe into a new arena. You know, horror is everywhere these days. I seem to have found myself in this niche that is, you know, it's a great experience as an actor, because everything you work on is such high dramatic stakes. You know, it's not just mundane reality. Everything has exclamation points and ominous kind of stakes. So, you know, I had no doubt in my mind when I knew Esta was helming this, I was on board immediately, just because I trust her and I respect her implicitly. And like Anne Rice herself, you know, there's a classiness to Esta's taste, which I, and again, for Mark Johnson and the people at AMC or in Gran Vía who are daring to take on this immense task. You know, I think their repertoire speaks for themselves. And it was a no-brainer. I'd worked with them before on a show called Halt and Catch Fire. So, again, for AMC, which I think is just, you know, such a special network.
And a matter of fact, that's a program we covered with the creators on our show when it was on. And it was a program that started out very slowly, but ultimately the critics came around and thought that, oh, this is a very special show, and the audience went in with it too, and turned out to be one of their biggest hits, as a matter of fact. We're speaking with Annabeth Gish. She is the co-star of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches. This past Sunday received five network simulcast on AMC, AMC Plus, Sundance TV, IFC, and BBC America. Episode 2 is this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on AMC, and I believe it's also presented on AMC Plus. And she joins us live from Los Angeles on this Thursday afternoon for a special edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, a promo about TV's current and future. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Is now 39 degrees at the top of the hour. If the question or comment for Annabeth, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our Monday program and our regular time period led off with Jeb Stuart, the executive producer and showrunner of Vikings Valhalla, which today started its second season on Netflix. If you missed that program, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, any of our podcast donations, or go to our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. That's tomorrow will be televised, hyphen between the words, onpodium.com. And joining us tomorrow on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have a wrap of CES 2023 and all the TV news that was presented and not presented so well, as it turned out. My guest will be the technology columnist at Media Village, Media Leadership website. We've had him on the show before, Jeff Minsky. It's Jeff Minsky, who was at CES in Vegas last week and had a very big inside view of what was going on. We'll find out about the TV announcements that were made and the ones that didn't get to be made the way they should have been. We'll explain tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here, Jeff and myself. Here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's it been like for you to develop not only a on-camera relationship as character with Alexandra, mother-daughter, but also as actor, actress with her playing the scenes, both on and off camera?
Oh, well, Alexandra is lovely in every way, inside and out. She is, you know, she's so captivatingly beautiful. Her blue eyes are so striking and captivating, and she's also just a genuine joy to work with. You know, I had to have blue contact lenses so I could have the same eye color as Alexandra, and then often I was in different sets of contacts just because of my character's catatonic state in the first episode before she awakens. So it was hard. It was just kind of anecdotally, it was kind of hard to see her, you know, to work with her, and because I had these thick lenses in, but it's wonderful, and it's a meaningful relationship to, you know, to play a mother-daughter role, especially one that's been so thwarted by, you know, this secret history.
And in the mother role, the matron role, how do you deal with the fact that your daughter is entering this whole world of witches and witchcraft, a world that she never knew existed in her family, and she has this career as a neurosurgeon, and that's not on the side, but she now has to deal with this sort of different dimensions of her life?
She's definitely thrown into the fire, for sure, Rowan Mayfair is. But I think, you know, that's what sets it off at such an extreme, beautiful takeoff point for the show. You know, I think my character, who I've been, you know, for 18 years, I had this horrible thing happen to me when I was a teenager, that my child was taken from me, and then I was medicated to try to keep the secret of the legacy at bay of the witching of Lasher. And, you know, it's a daunting, I think my character doesn't want her to be harmed by this evil / seductive force, you know. And yet at the same time, I want her to receive and own her rightful legacy.
We talked earlier about the fact that you're in a sort of, as an actress, sort of in what I would call a weird horror era in television, of your work in that medium, because you go between television and movies. And in thinking about what I wanted to ask you next, I remember in the 1940s, there was a producer named Val Lewton who did a series of great horror movies, most of them directed by Jacques Tournier, with photographer Nick Muscaraca, one of the most underrated cinematographers in film and later television. And Val Lewton believed that the horror you don't see is more frightening than the horror you see. And he always tried to base his films on that principle. How much do you believe in that? And how much does, in atmosphere, Mayfair Witches tries to, you know, not be too over the top and yet, you know, deliver what Anne Rice wrote?
Wow. Again, Simon, you're just knocking it out of the park with your questions. These are great. I mean, I do think, I always think in general, generally speaking, that the less you show, the more you feel, you know, and the less obvious you are. So yes, the in terms of horror, and I do think we're in, it's a weird era, but it is a beautiful era for horror because, try to say that fast 10 times, era for horror. Because, you know, I think we have all of these apocalyptic kind of things happening anyway. We have pandemics, we have political strife, we have wars, you know, all of these things that we are hearing about. But something about the genre of horror where we can go and escape into these kind of gothic, larger-than-life stories where horror is, you know, it's an extension, but it's not reality. You know, so people can, we can all kind of exorcise our trepidations and our fears by going through these stories. And because it is the narrative story that really reflects myths in our lives, I think it's we're entering again this it's horror is so popular these days because it's just revealing so much of what we're worried about on a larger context.
One would think that if you're in a, you're playing a character in a catatonic state of some nature, that it would be one of the toughest acting roles to play, even if it's only for a few minutes. Have you ever had a role before, either film or television, where you've had to play that? And if this is all, if that is new to you, how did you decide to tackle it?
Well, it is very challenging because you're physically handicapped. You know, for me, I was not prepared for how complicated it would be, I think, for me personally, just because I had a wig, I had eye contact lenses, I was in a wheelchair, and then trying to be and embody a character without showing emotion, it affects every level of your, you know, how much of your fingertips can move, how much can your eyes move, the gradations of awakeness. And as the medication, as the doctor starts to reduce her medicine, you know, then what are the levels of her waking up? So yes, it was incredibly challenging and frustrating, frankly, as an actress, because I do like to connect so much with my eyes, and to be sort of a vacant shell was very frustrating for me as an actress, you know, just personally as a human being.
You mentioned before, Annabeth, that you're sort of in the side of your TV career where it's sort of the horror otherworldly era on a consistent basis, because you're now working with someone who a lot of people think is sort of one of the new masters of suspense and horror television. His name is Mike Flanagan, and you've worked with him a number of times already. He's working on a new miniseries for Netflix based on one of the great Edgar Allan Poe stories for The House of Usher. How did you two connect, and what's been like working with him?
Well, I've just finished my fourth Mike Flanagan, and I think he's very much in line with the filmmaker you were mentioning before from the 40s. You know, Mike likes to deal in the psychology of horror and the emotion of horror rather than just the kind of gratuitous, gore. And and he does it so masterfully. So I worked with him about 8 years ago in a film called Before I Wake. And then I did Haunting of Hill House, Midnight Mass, and now the upcoming Fall of the House of Usher. And I think when you have, you know, a filmmaker that you really do respect so much, everybody just jumps at the chance to kind of stay in the family, because his community that he creates is that. It is a family. And when you are doing these kind of extreme emotional states, but it's grounded in reality and there is a message to it and a weight and a healing merit to it, I think, honestly. Like, I Midnight Mass, I think, was so potent because it really dealt with, you know, it dealt with ostensibly like a bloodborne pandemic, and it dealt with addiction, and it dealt with familial strife. So, you know, that's what narrative drama is, and that's what you hope cinema can do, to move people, to affect them and make them work through their emotions and then to heal.
Episode 2 of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches premieres this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on AMC and AMC Plus, available on cable and satellite, and also through smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. We've got the acclaimed actress and co-star of the series, Annabeth Gish, which is live from Los Angeles this half hour on a special Thursday edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Happ, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you aboard on this Tuesday afternoon, and we want to hear from you. There are many myths with Annabeth, so give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you missed any of our shows, you want to catch up an episode you missed, it's very easy. All you got to do is go to our homepage anytime you like, 24/7. And the homepage is blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget to check out our podcasts. They're available 24/7 on all of our podcast affiliates like Spotify, iTunes, the iRadio Podcast Network, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and so forth. And if the podcast site that doesn't take our show and you wanted to, let them know in a nice way. Let us know and who we need to contact to make it happen, and hopefully we will make it happen as well. You can also check out our website. It's been up now for about 4 or 5 months, and we do appreciate it. It's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. And if you have a question about the world of television, something for yours truly, we have a question box at the bottom of the home screen. And if we use your question on the air, you get the credit for it. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. Don't forget hyphen between the words. Tomorrow will be televised.onpodium.com. Your career has been really a mix of both TV and film performances. And usually a lot of actors or actresses will either choose one medium over the other and make that the dominant place of their work. You've been able to sort of bridge the gap, if you will. You found great roles in both mediums. Was that something you looked at when you first started, way back when?
Oh, goodness. Well, like most people, I think, in this industry, our careers, we try to happen to them, but they often happen to us. And I have been fortunate. You know, I did X-Files for me. Between West Wing and X-Files, I joined the TV genre before it became the kind of glorious heyday. Now we're having that golden era of television, and I'm just so grateful for it. I think that delineation anymore isn't so fine. You know, I think big movie stars are now doing television shows. It's just a crossover about material. People want to just tell good stories, and there's so much content and so many platforms that we're lucky enough to be able to kind of go everywhere.
A lot of people would get down on me if I didn't ask this question. What was it like working with Chris Carter and the Fox people on X-Files?
Oh, what a blast. It was just such an honor to join that show. And, you know, the fans that I've met through the years from that show, that I think I joined it 20 years ago, my goodness. And the friendships that were created from that show, both in personally and in my fans, it was such a gift for me. And Chris was great. You know, he's one of the smartest guys I've ever met. And he did create a show that's iconic and that still to this day, you know, is very prescient, you know, like it kind of predicted the state of things. So I'll go to work for Chris Carter any day.
Before we leave you, there's two other projects that you were involved with television, both critically acclaimed, that a lot more people should know that you were part of. One was Brotherhood, which I believe ran for 3 seasons on Showtime. It was critically acclaimed. A lot of good people worked on that program, and you had a major role in it.
I loved Brotherhood. Brotherhood is very, very near and dear to my heart. I can't say enough about it, and I do think it's one of those gems that when people find it even today, it's just one of those shows that, you know, I wish it would have reached more people at the time. It has such an incredible cast. Blake Masters, who created the show, really just was on to something beautiful. It's a beautiful world that he created, and I hope people do find it even today because it's just a beautiful show.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully written, directed, on location, wonderful performances, including yours, all the way through. The other program, and one that we did cover, was The Bridge on FX, based on an overseas format. Wonderful cast headed by Damien Bashir, who I think is a terrific actor, the Oscar nominee for the film he did, which really was one of the great surprise stories in recent Oscar history. Diane Kruger was involved also. Elwood Reed, the executive producer, was on our show. Wonderful producer, and it got a great 2-year run on FX.
You know, that's where I worked for the first time with Esta as a writer. Esta worked on The Bridge. She and I had met 20 years or 15 years ago, and then we did. She was on one of the writers for The Bridge, which is a great show as well on FX. And then we settled over to Mayfair Witches for AMC. So, yes, it all starts with, frankly, for me, it starts with the writing and then the casting. And once you have those two things in place, if you have a strong script and a strong cast, then off you go to the races if everything else can, you know, can formulate around those two elements.
So before we say goodbye to you, what can we look forward to starting this Sunday night as Mayfair Witches rolls on?
Episode 2 is quite a doozy. It's a ride, that's for sure. So hang in there, and there's lots more of Deirdre to come.
And by the way, are you hearing these rumors about at some point a crossover with Interview for the Vampire?
I have heard those
rumors. Interview with the Vampire, excuse me. Interview with the Vampire.
Yes.
I
have heard the talk of crossovers in the immortal Anne Rice universe, and I think it's a wise idea. The spectrum of her characters and her worlds are just so rich. I think it could do us all well.
Mm-hmm. So all you Anne Rice fans out there who are looking for a crossover and you've been reading about it in the entertainment trade press the last couple of days, you may get rewarded at some point. We will certainly see. In the meantime, second episode of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches will premiere this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on AMC and AMC+. Check your local info where both networks are available in your area on cable and satellite. In the case of AMC+, it's also available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. And for more details about the program and the service online, here's where you go, www.amc.com. That's www.amc.com. Episode 2, Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches, this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Annabeth Gish, thank you very, very much for coming on. It has been a delight and a wonderful pleasure having you. Good luck with you and everybody involved. My best to Mark Johnson, one of the executive producers of the show. He was with us way back when, and we'd love to have him back on. He's doing a great job, I think, with the Anne Rice shows, both your show and Interview so far on AMC, and hopefully many, many more, many more seasons to come.
Well, thank you so much, Simon. Much appreciated, and my pleasure.
Same here. Annabeth, take care. All the greatest. Have a wonderful rest of your year.
Same to you.
Annabeth Gish from Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, our news notes, our new classic trivia question, and new prize in play. And by the way, it's from AMC Networks, don't you know? Plus, I'll have some final thoughts about the Golden Globes on NBC. Mom, I promise you I'm not going to go too ranting over the top. The return of Lingo last night on CBS. And speaking of CBS, have you been watching Let's Make a Deal lately? I have. Watching it lately, you ought to. It's really taken a gigantic leap up. and the big Netflix project that we're going to announce as part of News Notes in a few moments. It's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tuning.com, together reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Chatting with Sherry. It's the new entertainment talk show that's getting the rave on Blog Talk Radio, and it takes place tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. It's Chatting with Sherry tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Be Televised, the promo about TV's current and future. Happy to have you with us on this special Thursday afternoon edition. Simon Avon with you live from New Haven, New York, 43 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If questions or comments are on remaining minutes, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, speaker, tuner radio, or get into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up shortly, classic trivia question and a number of comments. Golden Globes, Lingo, Let's Make a Deal, and a new Netflix project we will talk about shortly. And right now, let's give you news notes. The Golden Globes broadcast TV future looks slim or nil this afternoon, following both poor viewership totals and overwhelmingly negative critical reaction to the award ceremony's TV return on NBC Tuesday night. Final Nielsen numbers pegged viewership at 6.3 million, down 9% from 6.9 million 2 years ago when the Globes were last on NBC. However, the figure includes people watching live on Peacock. If you subtract the Peacock audience, NBC actually ended up with 5.3 million viewers, in second place among the broadcast networks, and a double-digit viewing drop in 2021. It may be the lowest-rated Entertainment Awards special of any kind ever. A new creative buy initiative from Netflix will offer script development deals to 14 writers of color or from various underrepresented communities. All 14 writers were recommended by six organizations focused on media diversity: the National Hispanic Media Coalition, the Coalition of Asian Pacifics in Entertainment, known as CAPE, Native American Media Alliance, Black TV and Film Collective, Outfest, and Inevitable Foundation. More about that coming up later this half hour. In other Netflix news, Mo Ammer's acclaimed dramedy Mo will be back for a second and final season later this year. Independent production company Footage Films has a deal with multi-channel bundle Tubi, owned by Fox, for a quartet of made-for-TV thrillers featuring African-American talent on both sides of the camera. The Assistant, starring Erica Mena, gets its Tubi launch January 20th. The other three, Best Friend, You're Not Alone, and No Way Out, no relation to the famous movies, reach viewers next month and March. Now our quickies. Starz will step in for HBO Max and play the second season of Minx later this year. As for HBO Max, which canned that series a few weeks ago, has raised the price of its mega content outlet, the commercial free version, by $1, first time since that launch late spring 2020. Renewal moves today. Ghost on CBS for season 3, Criminal Minds reboot Evolution with season 2 from Paramount Plus. Hulu scripted drama Saint X begins its existence there at last April 26. Dear Mama, FX's docu miniseries of mother and son Afeni and Tupac Shakur starts April 21st. Separately, Dave kicks off its third season April 5th. By the way, FX is being featured in person at the TV Critics Tour in Los Angeles. Food Network is set for Tournament of Champions 4, hosted by Guy Fieri. First round plays out February 19th. And if you missed it, Cinedigm and Roundtable Entertainment are collaborating to launch the GoPro channel this spring. The channel will transverse several content genres, sports, nature, and lifestyle, and incorporate both professional and user-generated material using GoPro cameras and equipment. And that is news notes for today. Well, now time for our classic trivia question. We are going for our third weekly winner in a row, so a brand new question, and we have a new prize. And that prize, incidentally, and in honor of having Annabeth Gish on the program today from Anne Rice's Mayfair Wishes, is an AMC Networks notepad and case. So you get the case, and inside is the notepad. It's a beautiful notepad, and it can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Remember the Green Hornet? That was the television series inspired by the great radio character, featured Bruce Lee in the role of Kato, his first major move into television and film. Well, here's the question. Who played the Green Hornet on ABC? Who actually played the Green Hornet on ABC? This is back in the late 1960s. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04 simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win the AMC Network's notepad and notepad case. It makes a great shelf saver, makes a great thing on your, wall or background somewhere or on the table. It's a good conversation getter. And also, of course, great value to you if you like to take notes or get your schedule together. It's really, really great. Once again, here's the question. Who played the Green Hornet on ABC in the 1960s? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of the Thursday, we'll post the question Friday morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. This Facebook is Simon Applebaum, and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. As we always say around here, in order to win, play in, do so, ASAP, and all the very best. And now, a trio of comments. First up, the Golden Globes. And no, Mom, I know you're listening. I'm not going to go ranting and raving all over the map. Here's what I'll say, and I'll say it briefly. It was an atrocious piece of television Tuesday night. Nobody should be happy at what happened. And I'll put it this way. The Golden Globes and the Oscars and the Emmys and the other major award shows got the news yesterday that Netflix next year is going to bring the Screen Actors Guild live to its mega content service in 2024. Because that's what could happen to the Golden Globes. I will be shocked if NBC will bring it back next year. It was that bad. And Gerald Carmichael's opening monologue was a turnoff. That's all I'll say. Number two, last night was a better viewing experience because last night was the return of a wonderful game show that just seems to keep on moving on no matter how many times it gets on the air and how many times it gets off the air. That's Lingo. I've always felt that next to Password, Lingo is one of the great games that kids and teenagers can use to build up their vocabulary, build up their English language skills, build up their word power. And it was great to see Lingo back, not only in the original format, or as much of it as possible, but also with some new twists and turns. It was on CBS. It's on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, and it's hosted by RuPaul. And here's one of the great surprises of the show. RuPaul's terrific. He is a terrific game show host. He's easy. He's suave. He's magical. He's funny. He really relates to both the audience in the studio and at home, and he relates to the contestants very, very well. He plays off them brilliantly, and he's also great at really showcasing the game and keeping the contestants aware of when they have letters out of place and so on and so forth. You know the game of Lingo, five-letter words. You've got to guess them. You have five chances to do so, and I like the fact that each, and in this case, it's a building up of a jackpot. The first one is like $5,000. Second is $4,000. 3, 2, 1. If you don't get that to five chances, the other team gets a chance to steal. There are four teams of two that play each game, and the final two end up in a showdown where one can then play for a jackpot that includes all the money they banked plus $50,000 on top of that. What I love about the game is that they really expanded it in some nice ways. The first round is the classic Lingo without the Lingo balls. And I know there may be some purists who may be a little upset about that, but it works. It works, trust me. And it's five-letter words, and each team gets three words to deal with. The second round is really neat. It's 10-letter Lingo, and the idea is you get a clue, and you're able to solve it as letters are put in. That's number two. And then comes the Lingo Showdown, where you have the teams divide themselves up, where one plays five-letter words, one plays six-letter words, and if there is a tie at the end in terms of the amount you bank in, you then play one last 10-letter word to see who goes on to the next round. Top two teams make the finals. Top team in the finals wins and gets a chance to win it all in the big bonus round. The graphic work on the Lingo boards is marvelous. It's clear. You understand it. It's super fast. Keeps the game moving. I love the set design. It's really great. Nice use of augmented reality, by the way, with the boards. It's clean. It's not too dark. There is a lot of light, different colors. It really works very, very well. Two things I would like to suggest, and maybe too late because maybe all the episodes have been produced. Number one, we don't get to really know the contestants in each half of the game until after the first commercial break. I would strongly suggest we don't do that. I suggest that that RuPaul introduce the contestants and we learn about them then for two reasons. One, you don't wonder, like, who are these people are and why should they be here? Number two, RuPaul plays off them very well. I was really impressed with how RuPaul was, like, listening to contestants, really jumping on some of the things they had to say and not, you know, not denigrating them, really having a ball with them. It was really great, and the audience appreciated it. And I can tell that RuPaul really studies the game very well. He really takes the game seriously, not too seriously. Great, great. I think Chuck Roy would have liked him, would like him as a host for Lingo. And secondly, I was very, very upset with the fact that the losing teams in each half of the show walk away with nothing. Can we cut this? I've talked about this before. There are some game shows out there that will say, you're leaving with nothing. Did you have a great time? Sorry. Doesn't work. Not with a primetime game show, for sure. They should have won at least $1,000. Can't you give them something? Even if they don't want to do, like, remember the old days of parting gifts? Whether it was how about updating that whole practice, like a year of Grubhub for free, or a year, or a six months of Lyft ticket, use of Etsy or eBay. Can we, like, stop this practice? You know, in the first game, by the way, the losing team actually was winning until they had to go to a tiebreaker. Both of them had built up a bank of $15,000. You're going to send them away with nothing? Because the other team was able to get their luck turned around and answer that last 10-letter lingo correctly? I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I really believe that if you're going to be a contestant, you should get something for being there. Look what the Wheel of Fortune does. You keep the money you earn. Look what Jeopardy does. If you end up in second place, you get $2,000. If you end up in third place, $1,000. You end up with something. It's not as if you've made a trek. You made the play for nothing. And it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths. It leaves a bad taste in the contestant's mouth and a bad taste in the audience's mouth. So I hope that if Lingo does go to a second season, they clean that up and clean up fast. And by the way, if there's any game shows that do this kind of practice, it's time to cut it out. It's not fair to the contestants. It's not fair to the audience. And it also raises credibility about how stingy the budget is for your show or how stingy you are in terms of giving out money or giving out gifts or giving out prizes. So think about that, if you will. Now, staying with – so by the way, again, Lingo is on Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Pacific time on CBS. Highly recommended. And by the way, great show for the family to watch together. Great show also, and I really hope that the producers will talk to educators about doing Lingo exercises with their classrooms, especially English classrooms. This is a great way to build up vocabulary, kids and young adults. Really, really great. Lingo. And I hope they do the 10-letter and the 6-letter versions too. It's a really wonderful deal. Mixes things up beautifully. Now, staying with CBS and game shows, have you watched Let's Make a Deal lately? As you know, I've been dealing with a personal health condition for 3 months plus, and tomorrow, by the way, we hope to have it all wrapped up tomorrow morning. Well, since I've had the extra time, I've had the opportunity over the last few months to catch Let's Make a Deal, which is now in its 14th season on CBS, 10 a.m. Eastern Pacific time. And if you haven't seen it lately, it has really taken a great step up. I've always liked how it's played on CBS. I've always liked how Wayne Brady does, and Jonathan Magnum as the announcer and co-star, and Tiffany Coyne as the model, and Kat Gray as the music director. But they've really made it a show which is quite improvisational. In fact, it's so improvisational that anything can happen at any time. Check this out. On today's episode, the first contestant that was picked from the audience was not picked to make a deal. Not kidding. Not picked to make a deal. Instead, Tiffany Coyne comes down and says, well, I have bunion issues. I got to go off the stage and get new shoes. So Margie, I believe is her name, was invited to go on stage and play Tiffany actually introduce the curtains, like curtain one, curtain two. And she had this wonderful broom, a small broom that she'd like whisk away to bring the prize to life, the curtain to life, if you will. She was wonderful. It was really great. And I'm happy to say she had a good deal for herself in two at the end, which was really marvelous. Or I've seen episodes where some of the contestants actually play Jonathan Magnum and actually announce the prizes to other people making deals. You know, like, you could have won this. It's blank, 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 and blank, and blank. With brown chip included, this deal is for $4,565. And they do very, very well. It's like they get the chance to be their own Jonathan Magnum or Wayne Brady or Tiffany Coyne or even their own Cat Gray. Recent contestant had drumsticks, did a rap drum solo with Cat Gray's music. It's that kind of thing. It's a show where anything literally can happen at any time. And I think the use of the video walls, having contestants from around, because of the pandemic, contestants from around the nation play in and win. In some cases, they've won the big deal, or close, is really, really great. And through it all, Wayne Brady continues to be absolutely, positively marvelous. It's time he finally gets a Game Show Daytime Emmy Award for Best Game Show Host. Finally, time. It's really outstanding. John Quinn, in the last couple of years, since being the executive hangover for Mike Richards and Dan Funk, he does a great job. But Chris Ahern has also become sort of the semi-star on the show, sometimes coming on. And that's another thing, too. Other members of the production team also can come on camera at any time with Wayne's blessing to partake in the ceremony. So just never, never know. It's that kind of a show. It really is as open air, open studio as possible. If you haven't seen Let's Make a Deal lately, it's a real hot streak. And I got to think next year it's got to be up for an Emmy. Again, Wayne Brady has got to get a game show host for this. And certainly the show needs to do it too. It really is a contender. It's really fantastic. Let's Make a Deal, 10 a.m. Pacific time on your local CBS station. Some CBS stations play it later in the day, so check your local listings, the CBS station area, and when it plays. And finally, I hope you checked out the second news note that we had a few minutes ago, and that is about the Netflix Diversity Project, which they're calling Creative Buy. It's a new initiative, and this is I could become one of the biggest expanding diversity initiatives by any one organization ever in television. For those of you who missed it a few moments ago, who just came in, here's what it is. 14 writers have been picked to develop TV series and movie scripts for Netflix. They have gotten, all of them, scripted development deals. And they'll be working with Netflix showrunners, Netflix programming management to create their dream projects. In addition, these 14 writers didn't just come from nowhere. They were recommended by organizations each dealing with media diversity. And I want to congratulate the National Hispanic Media Coalition, CAPE, the Coalition of Asian Pacifics Entertainment, the Native American Media Alliance, Black TV and Film Collective, Outfest, and Inevitable Foundation, all of them getting involved in this project and recommending the writers or writer producers that will be part of this. It's a great stupendous part. This is what we're talking about when it comes to expanding diversity and rewarding people of talent. By the way, I want to point out, for those of you dealing with a disability situation, I believe there's at least one or two disabled writers or producers that are also involved in this venture. And I hope the Respectability, which is the wonderful access organization for people with disabilities who want to be breaking the entertainment industry, I hope they'll get involved with this at some point. I know that they've done some work with Netflix in the recent past, and I hope they'll get involved with this project. This is marvelous. I hope this is a multi-year deal, not a one-shot. It's really, really great. We're talking about the opportunity for not just one, not just two, not just four, but 14 different writers to get their breakthrough in television and film. And there's no question that with the recommendations that these organizations have given Netflix to give them a shot, that they will make their mark. And if they do, you better believe this program expands and expands big. Netflix, way to go. This is a way you expand diversity, and you do it internally, and you do it creatively, and you do it well to the max. And that will bring us to the end of today's special edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Again, I want to thank Annabeth Gish, the co-star of Anne Rice's Mayfair Wishes being with us. You can see episode 2 this Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on AMC and AMC Plus. Tomorrow on Tomorrow We Televise, in our regular day and time period, we'll have Jeff Nitzke, the technology columnist of Media Village. We'll talk about CES 2023, the TV announcements that were made, the TV announcements from smart TV set makers that were not really fleshed out, and why they weren't fleshed out. Jeff was at CES 2023 last week in Vegas. We'll get the inside view from him, and I have a think we're going to have a great, great discussion about this. And what can CES and the TV set makers learn from what was not covered about television breakthroughs as well as what was covered? So be sure to be with us for that, and we'd love to have your feedback by phone or chat room as well. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on episode... Oh, one more thing. Again, if you want to catch up on our episode Monday that we led off with Jeb Stewart, the executive producer and showrunner of Vikings Valhalla, which premiered today on Netflix, check us out at www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, we're available 24/7 on podcasts on iTunes, iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spreaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Verbo, Podvine.com, et cetera, et cetera. And if there's websites or podcast sites that are not taking our program and you'd like them to, let them know. Be great about it. Be civil. And let me know. And let me know who to contact. We are, by the way, trying to reach out to Audible and Cumulus Media about getting on their podcast sites as well. And I hope to have a deal with On Podium next week, the week after a conversation with them about expanding our relationship. They've been absolutely fantastic. So let us know, and we'll do the work and make it happen for you, our audience. And we'd love to hear from you. What's your thoughts about Anne Rice on television? What's your thoughts about not only Mayfair Witches, but Interview with the Vampire? Plus, your thoughts about where things ran, where they are going in the TV world, including post-CES 2023 reaction. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, enclose your name and where you're emailing from, and your email address, how you get involved. Our Pastor Trivia Question of the Week. One more time, here's the question. AMC Network notepad and notepad case. The prize, who played the Green Hornet in the 1960s on ABC? His faithful servant Kato was played by Bruce Lee. That was his big breakthrough in both TV and film. But who played the Green Hornet, the actual character on that ABC series from the creators of Batman? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And don't forget, if you don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook, Simon Applebaum. Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. Also, use our email for our regular feature show to know. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? We'd like to give it the attention, and we have to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. We use suggestion on the air. You get the credit. And remember, there's other ways you can reach me as well. Communicate by Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Facebook and LinkedIn is Simon Applebaum. Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. However you communicate, email or social media, we communicate back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you, our audience, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy So is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website served by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. But while we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday. We're back on Friday, tomorrow, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Freaker Tuner Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, and our website, Tomorrow Will Be Televised, /onpodium.com. Whatever you're up to between now and then, always make it safe and make it great. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.